Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade. Today, we're talking about the challenges and opportunities of being an immigrant or refugee in Anchorage and in Alaska. My guest today on the phone is Susan Bomolowski, the Executive Director for Catholic Social Services. Here in the studio with me is Arendelle Pritchett. She's a staff attorney for the Alaska Immigration Justice Project. Welcome, and thank you to you both for being here today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great. And so after the break, too, we're going to also have Christine Garb online with us. She's a supervisor for Anchorage School District English Language Learners Program. So we're really excited about today's program. It's 2012. Happy New Year to everyone. And we thought this would be a great first Hometown Alaska for the new year, ringing in the new year and talking about new opportunities for folks that are new to Anchorage and new to Alaska. So for folks that are listening today, if you have questions for our guests or would like to share your story or some comments about immigration or being a refugee in Anchorage, you can call us in Anchorage at 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I'll mention right now, too, that online at alaskapublic.org, you can find a few links, one to the Alaska Immigration Justice Project, also to Catholic Social Services. You'd like to learn a little bit more about them. And of course, for the English Language Learners Program with the Anchorage School District. So I think before we get started with some really specific questions for Arendelle and Susan, it would be great to have you folks maybe briefly introduce yourselves and talk to us a little bit about your organizations and the services that you provide to immigrants and refugees in Anchorage. And so, Susan, if you maybe want to start for us and introduce yourself and let everybody know who you're representing.
Sure, thank you. I'm representing Catholic Social Services, and we actually are an agency that has 9 programs. And one of those programs is the Refugee Assistance and Immigration Services Program. We refer to it as RAISE. And we're the only state and federally funded resettlement program in Alaska for refugees. So we deal specifically with refugees, and we work primarily on promoting employment and self-sufficiency in the refugees that are assigned here to Alaska by the federal government.
Thanks, Susan. And Arendelle, did you want to do the same for us, please?
Yes, so I'm here representing the Alaska Immigration Justice Project. We kind of split into 2 parts. One part is a nonprofit agency providing low-cost immigration legal assistance statewide. The other part is the Language Interpretive Center, which is a public-private organization that's dedicated to creating a pool of qualified language interpreters for entities statewide.
Thank you. And so I think one thing that would be helpful for listeners, and I know it's something that I've been confused by, and so maybe helpful for folks to understand a little bit clearer, is one of the first things that we'd like to know is, what is the difference between an immigrant and a refugee? And I'm wondering, Susan, maybe if you could help us understand that a little bit better.
Sure. And that's a great question because people are often confused by that. The term refugee is actually a term given by the United States government. It's a recognized type of immigration status. Refugees have fled their country for a variety of reasons, but there has to be some well-founded fear of persecution, and that may be due to political opinion, race, religion, nationality, or some kind of membership in a social group. So for some reason, they're being persecuted in their country of origin, and they often flee and live in refugee camps. I think probably people have heard that term before. In fact, they may live there for many years. We have refugees that have been in, that actually were born and raised in refugee camps that have come here. So they leave everything behind. In fact, sometimes it's family members, it's possessions, even their identity is left in that country, but they want to take the chance to rebuild their life in a safe environment where they're free and hopefully in a peaceful environment. So they're actually assigned here to Alaska by different groups in the federal government, and they may get on a plane in Africa or Asia or wherever it might be, and they end up here. So they don't necessarily pick here, but they end up here. So you know, kind of a interesting status there, but it is a status that brings with it certain legal conditions, like they're able to work when they come here and they're eligible for different types of assistance. We also work with asylees, and asylees are individuals who live here who are here in the United States who fear being persecuted if they go home. So they're given asylum status. So it's another designated government type status.
Okay, and so I have a quick question about the, so do we know approximately how many of the refugees that come to the United States are assigned to Alaska? Like what percentage of that group?
Uh-huh, it's low. Like I said, we're designated as a refugee resettlement agent here, and we work very closely with the government about how many people we can efficiently work with and how many people Anchorage can absorb. So there has to be a level of affordable housing and employment that can support the number. For example, we take a maximum of 120 individuals per year. Someplace like San Diego or Phoenix is taking thousands. It's a bigger place. They can absorb them more. Across the country, they bring in tens of thousands. The goal is 70,000. It's not that high right now, but so of that, we get 120.
Okay, so that's our refugee and asylee population. What's the definition of an immigrant? So, and how is that different from what you just described as a refugee?
I don't know that there's necessarily really a definition of what an immigrant is. That probably depends a little bit on the political opinion of the person that you're speaking with. Just to kind of add on to that great definition of refugees and asylees, I would just add that many of those people end up becoming immigrants in the sense that they may end up becoming permanent residents or citizens of this country.
Thanks for that.
Yes, and I would agree with that. And we do provide limited immigration services to our refugees, not to the general community like AIJP does.
Thanks, Susan. So maybe a opening question for you, Susan, just to better understand what services you're providing at Catholic Social Services. Can you talk to us just a little bit about, I think you mentioned there's a maximum of 100 folks that you work with per year. Has that trend been the same for you folks over the last, say, if we were to look at the work that you've been doing over the last 5 years or even the last 10 years, have you seen those numbers change?
Yes, that's actually a great question. And we actually work with about 550 clients a year. That was our figure from our last fiscal year, because we can work with people up to 5 years after they've been in the United States. So while we'll accept about 120 new people every year, we work with many more than that. And that number has changed. Actually, the program was started in 2003. Actually, Robin Bronin, who's with AIJP now, started it up in Delta Junction with former Soviet Union refugees. So it's grown since then steadily upward, and we think we're going to keep it about where it is now because, like I said, Anchorage has to be able to absorb the individuals, because we are actually graded on or looked at how we assist people in finding employment. So that's our biggest role, is to provide intensive case management and employment assistance for individuals that come in. We start out, though, by meeting them at the airport. So that's kind of neat. I've actually experienced that, where a family's coming in and you meet them at the airport, and we are tasked with finding them an apartment, which in Anchorage can be difficult, as you well can imagine, with our housing. So we locate the apartment so it's ready when they come, and we have to partner with the community to get donations around furniture, household goods, and things like that. So we start out with meeting them, but we don't keep on supporting them financially. Sometimes people are a little confused by that. They rapidly need to start working because the financial incentives taper off. So as you can imagine, people come from all over the world. Helping them with English language is very important. You'll hear more about that later with Christine. They learn about citizenship. We have job readiness. If you come over to our Welcome Center, which is where we have our classes, you'll see classroom instructors teaching people about money. you know, here's a quarter, here's a nickel. So if you can picture learning all that. So there's all that orientation to the United States, as well as trying to help them integrate into their community. Because in order to accept a group here, we have to demonstrate that there's somebody in the community that can speak the language.
Right.
And can act as an interpreter. And, you know, we've got the Language Interpreter Center that was being discussed. So that's very important. So basic needs come first, and then jobs quickly follow that. And you know, just the all-around orientation. Can you imagine coming here right now? You're coming from Africa, maybe,
right.
And it's like, well, we got 4 feet of snow, and it's 10 below zero.
Exactly.
So it's
If you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and my guests today are Susan Bomolowski, Executive Director with Catholic Social Services, and Erin Dell Pritchett, Staff Attorney with Alaska Immigration Justice Project. And we're talking about both the challenges and opportunities of being an immigrant or refugee in Anchorage. So, Susan, as a follow-up to that, I'm wondering, you said you're able to work with clients up to 5 years. Is mm-hmm. there something magical about a 5-year cutoff point, or why is that?
Well, that's a great question. What's magical is around funding. You know, we're funded to help people that long, but really what we see is we have very intense services for the first 6 months to a year. And by that time, the refugees that come in are very motivated, and a lot of them have, you know, found a job, found a community, moved from the original apartment that we set them up in, and are becoming integrated into the community here. So the assistance they need tapers off quite a bit. So I don't think there's anything magic about it, other than it's probably an average of, you know, or a far end of how long it might take somebody to become self-sufficient here. So sometimes we get what are called secondary migrants. They come from other places in the United States where they originally resettled, and then they come to Alaska from there. It could be Nebraska or Virginia or Oregon, and they're considered secondary migrants. And again, we can work with them up to 5 years.
So again, if you're listening, you're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA. And if you have questions for our guest today about immigration or being a refugee in Anchorage, please call in at 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Erin Dell, working for the Alaska Immigration Justice Project, same question for you. Noticing any specific trends or any changes over the last, say, 5 to 10 years in the number of folks that you're assisting?
Well, I have only been with AIJP for about a year and a half, and we were founded in 2005. So unfortunately, I'm unable to speak to the long-term changes in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Over that time period. What I can say is that Alaska does attract a very diverse immigrant population, which I think that many people in the community may not be aware of.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? So what nationalities are you guys working with?
We really work with people from all over the world. AIJP has assisted people from more than 93 countries, so I think it's really hard to narrow it down. And then I think within the office, we have people with different language abilities. So, for example, I speak Spanish. Many of my clients are Spanish-speaking. We have an attorney who speaks Korean. Of course, he will get different clients that speak Korean.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the majority of our client base, I'm just not sure.
Okay. And how about for you, Susan? Is there, in terms of a nationality or a group that is more represented from a specific country?
Sure. That's an interesting question also, and that's something that changes over time. When we first started, we were seeing most of our people from former Soviet Union countries, Russia, Ukraine, Uzbekistan, and we still do see some, but from there, we had a big group of Hmong come in from Laos that were resettled, and there's actually, you know, several thousand Hmong in the community now. They're quite well established. Most recently, we're getting a lot of people from Somalia. So what we've seen in the last few months is the majority are from Somalia. We have one person that came from Iran, and we have actually many Sudanese. The Sudanese population here is probably around 1,000, perhaps more. Many of those are the secondary refugees that I was talking about, but we have worked with many primary arrivals from Sudan, Togo, the former Zaire, Gambia, Cuba. We've had a lot of people from Bhutan recently, and also Burma. We've had people from Burma. So it's, like Arundel was saying, all over the world, and you see that mirrored in the school district, you know, where 93 languages are spoken. So it is fascinating. It's not without its challenges.
Right. So maybe a follow-up question for you then, Susan, in terms of, is it families that you're seeing or individuals that are coming? Or, you know, what is there kind of an average age for the refugees that you're working with at Catholic Social Services?
Sure. That's another great question. When we first started, the only people that came here were family reunification cases. So if somebody, you know, had moved here from, I don't know, you know, maybe they came up from Oregon somehow and they got here and they had family members in their country of origin, they came and joined them. In 06, we were certified to get free cases, which means that we were tasked with providing all the support. There was no family support. And really, right now, what we see coming in is kind of a combination. For example, in September, we got 5 single males from Somalia, all around the same age, kind of late 20s, mid-30s, a single male from Iran. But we're also getting a lot of families. So a mother from Somalia came with her 3 children. You know, we get different compositions, so it's hard to say that there's one or the other. Really, it's kind of a spectrum, and we have to look at it as far as housing, because, you know, housing is hard here. We get a family of 5 or 6, that's a little tougher than single males where you can maybe find a roommate situation. So that's a great question. I'm sure the average is somewhere in the middle, but each family has its unique characteristics.
And it's interesting to hear that that's, you know, somewhat changed over the years. What about the immigrant population that you're working with, Arundel? Are you seeing kind of a families that are coming to you for assistance or individuals? And maybe if you could just add to that, really, what are the priority services they're looking for from you guys?
Wow. I would say in terms of families, quite a few of our petitions are family-based in some way, whether that's a spouse petitioning his or her spouse, you know, someone petitioning their mother, something like that.
Can you define that for us? What does it mean to petition for?
Yeah.
Explain that a little bit.
So, I mean, I'll use an example of a couple where one person is a United States citizen and the other person is not. Depending on how the other person entered the country, it may be possible for that non-citizen spouse to gain permanent residency in this country through a petition filed by the U.S. citizen. And just to add on to the whole family thing, I would say that most people end up in Alaska who I deal with because of some family member being here. That could be an 8th cousin or something, but they usually know someone before they come.
Okay, so if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA. I'm your host, Shelley Wade. And today our topic is immigration or refugee status in Anchorage and some of the challenges and opportunities. You can call in with your questions or comments or share your stories in Anchorage at 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can call 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And again, just as a reminder, there's a few references or websites there. You can link into the Alaska Immigration Justice Project website or the Catholic Social Services website to learn a little bit more about the services our guests are talking to us about today. So maybe as a follow-up for you, Susan, at Catholic Social Services, and another question to help us, I think what I'm trying to do is kind of paint a picture and better understand what what the immigrant in Anchorage or refugee looks like and kind of the average immigrant or average refugee, if you can even do that, you know, if that's even a possibility in Anchorage. I think a lot of folks are really curious about that. And so my other question was about, you know, how about education or skills or some of the talents that our immigrant populations or refugee populations are bringing to Anchorage?
Well, again, that runs the gamut. In fact, we've got a great story. We had a refugee arrive from Uzbekistan back in 06, a mother and her daughter, and we worked with her, and she actually was a doctor, a pediatrician there, and you know, you can't get a position like that here, or if you're an engineer, working as an engineer or a teacher, because of their credentialing and the language differences. So she ended up getting a job with us and actually was just hired into a new grant we got on preventive health for our refugees. So that's kind of neat. But, you know, people come with all kinds of skills. Teaching is a big one. We've had teachers come and engineers, other medical professionals. You know, unfortunately, a lot of times they start with whatever jobs are available. So, you know, people often come with skills. Not everybody. I mean, if people have been in a refugee camp for a long time, you know, they may not ever have had education, you know, or an opportunity to get those skills. So that leads to challenges when the kids enter the school system and rapidly pick up the language. You know, and then Christine will talk more about that in a little bit, I'm sure. But, you know, that can cause some challenges too. So it is difficult to kind of come up with just the average because there's so much diversity.
Right. So we've got a caller on the line. Everett, welcome to Hometown Alaska. You're on the line.
Thanks. I had a question. I'm marrying a Malaysian citizen. I'm a U.S. Alaska resident and citizen, and marrying a Malaysian citizen. And we're looking at, she's Western educated, went to school in Australia and the U.S. both. And we're not looking at immediate immigration to the U.S., but probably 5-6 years down the road. And just wondering, what are some of the obstacles and some advice you might have?
Arundel, maybe you can help us understand that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to your particular situation, but in general, I can speak about the process for a United States citizen petitioning for a spouse. There are basically two ways to do it, assuming the person has no negative criminal or immigration history. Either having them come in on an immigrant visa, which means that you apply and there's a petition approved inside the United States that then, once approved, is shipped off to the consulate that is applicable, and they do an interview there and decide whether or not to issue an immigrant visa. The minute that person comes into the United States with their immigrant visa, they are a permanent resident. The other option is, depending on if the person is here and how they are here in this country, it may be possible to file for what's called adjustment of status, which is, again, the United States citizen submits a petition basically saying they want their relative to be here. And at the same time, the non-citizen spouse, in this case, files an application for permanent residency, and the interview is done in the United States.
Okay. All right, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for your call, Everett. Appreciate it. And Arundel, is there a place where people can go online to understand a little bit more about the details there?
Yeah, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services is what the INS's name has been for quite a long time now. And their website is www.uscis.gov. And that has various forms and information.
Great. Thank you. So we have another caller on the line. Jim is calling from Anchorage. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Jim.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm enjoying the show. I have contributed financially to another agency that I think is an important part of a service delivery system to immigrants and refugees in our community, and that's Alaska Literacy Project, which is also a nonprofit, and like Catholic Social Services and Alaska Immigration Justice Project, and I think is worthy of support. Yeah, it's important that immigrants have and refugees have legal advocacy and employment training, but it's also important that they get the skills to learn how to speak English And that's what Alaska Literacy Project has been doing for a long time. Also, I think Nine Star has some English as a second language classes. I think they were on your show not that long ago.
Right.
So I just wanted to mention Alaska Literacy Project as I think an important player in making sure that immigrants get the services they need.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. We actually at CSS, we contract with ALP and with Nine Star to help with those classes. We can't do it all ourselves, and they're great partners, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Jim. And we've got another caller on the line, Bianca. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hello. My name is Blanca Noriega, and I'm calling because I just would like to clarify a little bit what is the difference between a refugee and an immigrant, or, excuse me, a person that is here as an asylum. And the difference, and I've been seeing this because I've been working with immigrant families for many years. I did a research study on them. And sometimes people get very confused about what is the distinction. And the distinction is that our government has very wonderful projects for all the refugees or people who claim asylum because they feel that their life is threatened somewhere else. But there are these other immigrants that actually just decided to come to the United States because they are looking for a better life. They really want to change their life, and they think that this is the place that they want to live in. So always an immigrant change residence and from one country to another. The reasons can be very different. And what immigrants face after they emigrate is that in some cases, just as it was mentioned before, Catholic Social Services provide many services to certain group of immigrants. But there are others that do not have that opportunity. So they are on their own. They start their lives by themselves. And sometimes it's very difficult.
Thank you for your comments, Bianca. I wonder, Arundel or Susan, aside from the services you provide, so we heard Jim, a caller earlier, talk about the Alaska Literacy Project. We know Alaska Immigration Justice Project is there, Catholic Social Services. Are there other organizations and entities for immigrants like Bianca's describing that come to Anchorage?
Well, I know that some of our parishes work with immigrants, and Blanca's right. I mean, it can be much more difficult for someone, coming as an immigrant. They don't have the same status that a refugee does when they come here, and get some of the government status like we talked about. So, certainly there's, the school district works with us, but I don't think that's what you're asking about. I'm not sure about other groups that work specifically with immigration issues.
No, and I would like to say that there is a big need in our community for all those families mm-hmm. and people that don't have the opportunity to get any kind of help. When I've been, presenting my studies and kind of guiding families in what is the best for them, because one of the things that we need to consider when we talk about immigrant families is that they left behind their culture. So the main goal is to be acculturated into our society. Sometimes it doesn't happen just because the immigrant doesn't know how to relate themselves with the new society. Sometimes the immigrant allow themselves to be assimilated. Sometimes they just reject the new condition because they feel afraid of what is coming or what it might happen to them. Not because we are hurting them, just because when you don't know what you are, the new environment just make you feel afraid of what might happen to you or to your family. And we can see that, for example, parents sometimes do not allow their children to do this or that although it's no bad for their children, just because the parents, they don't understand what is the procedure or what is the whole meaning of these activities. So I would say that it would be great to have a place in town where we could actually help these families and guide them to be acculturated. So acculturated is when the immigrant achieves, I would say it's in between. You are not from here, you are not from there, but you are happy with both. You know, once you start a new life in a country, you are leaving behind something that was dear to you, something that was clear for you because it was part of your identity. And from that point, you need to develop a new one. You need to become the new person that you're going to be in this country. And so my focus these years studying immigrants have been pretty much in the emotional side of them, how we can help them, how we can guide them, how we can tell that it's not bad for them or for their children to be part of our society. And that is a big thing. That is one of the biggest conflicts that I have found with immigrant families.
Well, thank you very much, Blanca, for that description of some of the needed services. And thank you for your call today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. We do have an email from Sarah, an email from one of our listeners, and she said that she had a comment for our show today. And so this may be some good news for you, Blanca, that she's an intercultural trainer providing orientations to BP employees and their families that come to Alaska from another country. And she said, we have had people coming from Angola, Trinidad, the UK, and Indonesia. And she says that employees and their spouses receive tailored one-day programs and children receive youth programs. And she says, if anyone else is looking for these kinds of services, I would be happy to help. And so we've got Sarah's contact information, and I think we could probably put that on our website for you so that you'll have a resource and other folks will have a resource to share with other immigrant and refugee populations and individuals and families as they enter our community. So we're going to take one more call and then take a short break here. Lauren, welcome to Hometown Alaska. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I have a question concerning between Western Samoa and American Samoa. When you have, if I know that you're American Samoan citizens are the only ones considered a U.S. national. Would they have any more luck in getting a spouse that is in Western Samoa to America? I have a friend who lives in Alaska, came here with her family. Her husband would go back and forth as a pastor between Western Samoa and California, and then she moved to Alaska, and he got turned back in Honolulu because he misunderstood a question or something like that. Does she have any more chance of getting him to be able to be reunited with their family because she's a U.S. national versus, or does she have less of a chance because she's a U.S. national and not a U.S. citizen?
I can't speak specifically to your friend's situation. However, with regard to U.S. national status, American Samoans are U.S. nationals. That is correct. What American Samoans can do who wish to petition for a family member, such as a husband, is to naturalize and become United States citizens, at which point they are United States citizens and go through the process like any other United States citizen.
So they have to be a citizen in order to do it. They don't have special status because they're a U.S. national.
Basically, they have to become a citizen just like to be able to file a petition as a U.S. citizen. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call, Lauren.
I would like to say that, you know, as a daughter of an immigrant, from my mother is from the Netherlands, And so I'm first generation American on my mother's side. And I just want to say that we're a country made up of immigrants in a lot of ways and refugees. And I'm proud of that. And I think we all should, you know, be understanding and helpful toward each other of those that are new in our country. That's all.
Thank you, Lauren. Greatly appreciate your call. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Susan Bomolowski from Catholic Social Services, Arundel Pritchett from Alaska Immigration Justice Project, and we're going to bring online Christine Garb. She's a supervisor for Anchorage School District English Language Learners Program. You're listening to KSKA. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back, everyone. If you're just tuning in, this is Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Shelley Wade. Today, our topic is immigrant and refugee challenges and opportunities in Anchorage. And I have three wonderful guests here today. On the phone is Susan Bomolowski. She's the executive director for Catholic Social Services. Here in the studio with me is Arundel Pritchett. She's a staff attorney for the Alaska Immigration Justice Project. And then on the phone, I'm going to say it right, Christine, is Christine Garby, the supervisor for Alaska School District English Language Learners Program. So hi to everyone again and welcome back. And thanks for joining us, Christine. It's nice to have you on the line.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so why don't we go ahead and start out with you, Christine, and if you could just explain to folks who you are and tell us a little bit about the English Language Learners Program at the school district.
Okay. My name is Christine Garby. I run the English Language Learner Program, and we serve roughly 5,000 students, kindergarten through 12th grade. We provide services to students who come to the district who may not speak another language or they're influenced by another language in their family. And the services are provided, they're a little bit different at each grade level, but our goal is for students to gain English proficiency and become successful students in the school system.
Thank you, Christine. So for folks that are just tuning in, too, if you have comments, questions, or would like to share your story about immigration or refugees in Anchorage, please call us from Anchorage at 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And again, you can get online and look at the Hometown Alaska link, and you'll find links to the organizations for the folks that we're chatting with today. So Christine, maybe just to continue to learn a little bit more for us and for listeners about the Language Learners Program, what are some of the unique challenges that you have witnessed from the educator's perspective and through the program that you're administering through the school district, those unique challenges maybe that immigrant youth or refugee youth are facing?
I would say one of the biggest challenges is probably the language barriers. From when the students arrive in the school district, and if they do not have the English skills, and then it's very difficult to communicate with their parents as well if they don't have the language. And then although we have a wide variety of staff that speaks different languages and we have the ability to communicate with parents in almost any language, it's a challenge. It takes a little bit more of an effort to communicate with families.
And I think folks would be less interested to hear a little bit about the kind of the teaching technique. And years ago, I taught English as a second language in China as a Peace Corps volunteer. And I know, you know, there were a lot of tricks to the trade and different kinds of styles and ways of getting folks that, you know, are speaking English as a second language to open up and feel comfortable with even saying the first word, hello, to someone. And I wonder how that works for kids and for the youth that you're working at with. And I'm guessing there's probably some games and fun things that are involved.
Yeah, but the biggest thing is that the students have to be safe, have to feel safe to take risks with language. You know, if the students aren't feeling comfortable and feeling safe, then they won't practice. And, you know, nobody can learn another language without practicing. So you have to have lots of opportunities for students to be able to practice language and use language. And so it's the environment, I think, that's the most critical piece for them.
And so in terms of environment, do you feel like is there some of that interaction speaking English and the opportunities to do that and then the practice opportunities, is that happening outside of the school setting as well, you think?
I think it does happen outside of the school setting as well. We have lots of, you know, there's after-school opportunities for students, for after-school tutoring. You know, if they're involved in any kind of after-school sporting activities, there's that as well. And then we, you know, at the same time, we're working with lots of families across the district in helping them learn English and learn about the school system as well. So,
okay, so maybe a question for both Arundel and Susan as well, too. So I've asked the question to Christine, and I'll put it to you too as well in terms of, you know, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges that folks face? So we've heard language and maybe, you know, finding a job, maybe even some legal issues, but is there kind of a consistent or a unified challenge or a top three challenges that folks are facing? And maybe Susan, if you can address that first.
Yeah, that's kind of tough because I think they blend together. As Christine was talking about with the language, and we actually partner very closely with the school district. In fact, we have a joint grant around a school liaison to help our families, because when the children are immersed in the language, they often learn it faster than the parents. So you've got a power imbalance there that can lead to family difficulties. So, you know, there's that. There can be isolation. You know, someone in the family, the adult, isn't able to drive, which probably they haven't. If they've come over from some country that where they weren't driving and is hesitant about the bus system, you can get isolation there. So I think that's a huge challenge. Even like, you know, Blanca was saying earlier on the call, that becoming integrated, finding your cultural roots, but learning the culture of the new place, you know, they're tremendous challenges, and they're all being thrown at somebody at once. So, you know, a lot of times people need to find that support. So I'd say that's a challenge, is finding that support. And hopefully we provide that through our RAISE program, you know, but not everybody necessarily has that. So negotiating the system is a biggie, and, you know, we work with a lot of people on trying to help with that.
And do you think, Susan, are there any challenges that are really unique to living in Anchorage? I mean, you mentioned one of them earlier, which is arriving, you know, from maybe a warm community back in your home country to something that's not quite so comfortable here in Anchorage today.
Right, and kind of how to dress your kids. You know, if you don't dress your kids properly, you can get in trouble at school. You know, you've got to fit into the culture that way. So that's certainly unique. I think, you know, none of us can just pick up and drive out of Alaska. You know, if we want to start a new life somewhere else, it's, you know, a little harder than if you're going from, you know, Ohio to Indiana or something. So those are challenges too. I think the isolation here, you know, can be a challenge when you're maybe trying to find a cultural group that you fit in. It's certainly something different. You know, there's just the not only the cold, but the light and dark cycles here, getting used to things like that that wouldn't necessarily be a challenge somewhere else. I think the diversity of Anchorage is a positive, but that can come with misunderstandings, and we've addressed a lot of those, and I think that's wonderful. But educating the community about
who's a refugee, who's an immigrant, you know, what and how they fit into what's going on in the community.
So I'd like to talk a little bit more about that, about, you know, educating Anchorage residents. And Blanca really touched on this in a strong and really powerful way. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, Arundel, anything that you would like to add about some of the challenges that you've witnessed from folks that you're working with at the Immigration Justice Project?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that, again, it really depends on the individual. If you're a person moving to the United States from, say, an English-speaking country with a university degree, your problems might be that you don't have connections here, your qualifications aren't recognized here, people are unfamiliar with the school system you were educated in. If you're someone moving here with low education level who does not speak English, you know, you're going to have problems just navigating the system, let alone anything else. And then we have a lot of people who have lived in this country since they were babies or very small children, speak English fluently with an American accent, were educated here, and are not allowed to work. And that's a whole other problem.
So you are, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and today we're talking about immigration and being an immigrant or being a refugee in Anchorage and some of the challenges and opportunities. If you would like to ask a question or share your story or have a comment, you can call us from in Anchorage, 550-8433, outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So maybe getting back to the question of just educating Anchorage residents, I'm curious to know, in, you know, through the school district or through the Immigration Justice Project or Catholic Social Services, you know, what programs or what kind of outreach are your organizations or groups doing to really teach folks that are from Anchorage, you know, this is we're a growing, diverse population, and here's what you should know about what it means to be an immigrant or a refugee and some of the challenges. And maybe, Susan, you can kick us off if you have any ideas or thoughts on that.
Sure. We take every opportunity we can to educate. We're asked a lot of different places. Karen Ferguson, the program director of RAISE, speaks a lot. I take opportunities to do that. We write compass pieces for the paper, educational pieces in that way. We also have every June the World Refugee Day, which is a worldwide celebration, and it's really a lot of fun. It's in the Lions Park, whatever day is closest to June 20th, whatever that Friday is. We also use a lot of volunteers. We figure every volunteer that comes into our program is a liaison to the outside, you know, as an ambassador. They're going to tell people about what we do. So we like to get people involved that way. We also answer the hard questions. You know, people will write me or send me letters and say, why are you bringing people over here? There's not enough jobs or money mm-hmm. for the people that are here. Why are you doing this? And, you know, we take that opportunity to educate around what a refugee is, why they might be coming here, and how the program doesn't take from others. We all work together, and that actually the refugees that come in that we work with, you know, get employed quickly and keep the job. So there's, again, it's probably taking advantage of those opportunities and looking for opportunities to get out and speak and involve the refugees that are here too, because a lot of them are willing and able to do that, to speak to others about what they do.
So we have a caller on the line. Sandra, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I missed part of the program because I was driving, but now I'm home. And I just wanted to comment on volunteering with refugees. Our Rotary Club adopted or mentored a family of Bhutanese refugees and had a wonderful experience with that. And it gave us an opportunity for different people to become involved with this family. And then we broadened our experience out to try to help the program in general. So I really encourage people who are listening to the program to find a way to get involved and get to know these people and help to integrate them into our community.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sandra. Was that East Rotary or International?
No, East.
East, yeah.
Well, thank you, Sandra.
I've been listening to Susan.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Sandra. So along those lines, in terms of, you know, you can get involved, it sounds like, as an individual or even as a small group or entity. I know our Return Peace Corps volunteer group here in Anchorage, we actually had someone from Catholic Social Services come to one of our meetings and just introduce what Catholic Social Services does and help us understand a little bit better about how we could, as a small group, provide some support and some assistance and volunteer our time, which was really helpful. I wonder, Arundel, are there opportunities with the Alaska Immigration Justice Project or others that you know of for Anchorage residents to get involved and learn more?
Yeah, you know, we don't really have that many volunteer opportunities just because primarily in the legal services side of things, we are dealing with people's confidential information and do need a particular skill set. I know the Language Interpreter Center does sometimes take volunteers, and I would certainly welcome people who are interested in contacting them to find out more information about that. The Language Interpreter Center also does sort of outreach training for groups and different agencies on roles, responsibility, and ethics of working with qualified interpreters, which I think is really, really helpful, and language access is certainly a big issue.
So, Christine, maybe you can add to that list of how folks can get involved.
Well, we always welcome volunteers in our schools to work with children. So that's one way. I just wanted to add to the fact where you were mentioning that you where Catholic Social Services had come in and worked with you.
Yeah.
We partner with Catholic Social Services as well, and they've come in and worked with our staff on understanding the difference between refugees and immigrants and the services that are provided. And with the grant that Susan was talking about, one of our main goals is, you know, building relationships with families and increasing communication with families. So, and making sure that those are trusting relationships.
That's great. Thank you, Christine. So I wanted to, as a follow-up for you, Christine, ask a little bit more about the English Language Learners Program there with the school district. And I think listeners are curious to know a little bit more about the teachers that are involved. So how many teachers and are trained to work in the program? And really, how many students are you guys working with? Is there, and I think folks would be curious to know, too, if that number or if those numbers have changed over the last 5 or 10 years?
Well, we have about 200 staff members that work with our students in all the different schools, and they range from bilingual tutors to ESL teachers, also ESL counselors, language and cultural liaisons, and the refugee liaison support teacher, and then we have specialists. So we have quite a number of people that are working in schools, not just with kids, but with staff as well. Our numbers have been fairly consistent over the last couple years because the numbers that we track basically are the numbers for kids that are eligible for service in our program. And so every year we exit so many students as they become proficient, and then we gain additional students. But our numbers, we gain about as many students as we exit each year. So our numbers have been fairly consistent over the last several years.
So we did hear earlier that the school district is working with students that speak over 93 languages. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's right around 90 languages it is, yep. But our top five languages, actually the top three languages are where most of our students are. And then it goes all, I mean, somebody who speaks maybe the 90th language, there might just be one or two students within that language group.
Okay, and what are those top three languages?
Spanish, Hmong, and Samoan.
And Samoan, okay. So I have a question for really all three of you, and maybe a good way to wrap up our time together is, I think folks would be curious to know about some of the success stories and, you know, the positive experiences that you've had working with immigrants and refugees and young folks in Anchorage. And so I'm wondering, just kind of looking back over your experience, and even if your experience was maybe even outside of Anchorage, some of those success stories that you've witnessed along the way. I think folks would be excited to hear about some of that, some of the positive outcomes of the work that you're doing. So Susan, maybe do you have something that you'd like to share with folks?
Sure. I mean, we have, I could go on and on about our positive stories, but, and I'll actually direct people to our website also. We have a short video on our website, cssalaska.org, where we feature a story by a young man named Isaac who was in Yemen and came to Syria, who was actually Jewish and was under a lot of persecution. In fact, his family was killed, and he came here, and he's a student at UAA and working full-time and going into the pre-med program. And he, you know, offered to be in our video and just, you know, it was pretty amazing. And he has some funny description of his experiences learning how to drive. He had to go through it twice and kind of went into ditches a few times learning to do that. But, you know, it's things like that where, or the woman who came over from Uzbekistan who is now working in our preventive health grant, you know, where you can help people identify what their strengths were, what they, you know, their skills, how they can use them here to benefit them, themselves, their family, but also the larger community. There's a lot of Hmong and Sudanese businesses that are coming up. You know, those are very exciting. The Bhutanese community that came over from a refugee camp in Nepal was able to experience their religious ceremony for the first time when they came here in their entire lives. So, you know, it's things like that that you watch happening that are just very exciting.
Well, thank you, Susan. That's really powerful and really just enlightening to hear that. And enlightens the heart to hear that.
Yes.
Just the young man on the driving experience, maybe he can teach some Anchorage drivers how to drive. Arendelle, how about you with your work with immigrant populations?
Yeah, also there are so many heartwarming stories that I can think of. I guess I would just emphasize that people are coming to this country for a reason, and the people who are making it here are, it's very difficult to actually get here and stay here. So very motivated people. We do have a focus at AIJP on crime victims and helping victims of crimes such as domestic violence to regularize their immigration status. So you might have a situation where someone came to this country as on a fiancé visa, upon arriving in this country, found that her new husband was physically, emotionally, sexually abusive to her, told her he wouldn't file the immigration paperwork. She doesn't speak the language, has no friends here, has no community, doesn't know what to do, and now is a United States citizen years later. Those kind of stories are so heartwarming.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Arendelle. And this has been a really great hour, and thank you so much to my guests, Arendelle Pritchett from the Alaska Immigration Justice Project, Susan Bomolowski, Executive Director for Catholic Social Services, and Christine Garby with the English Language Learners Program. She's a supervisor for the Anchorage School District for that program. Coming up next week, Charles Woolforth hosts a discussion of aviation safety in Alaska and a program that has cut deaths 50% in the last 10 years. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Shelley Wade.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.